All right, I'm Tim Wallace, and I'm going to try briefing this in a chart and a third. Can't believe it. Can't display a PDF better than this. Pretty astounding. This is one of the reasons I don't use Windows. All right, we're going to talk about AI. Should have come here yesterday, I guess, to check out the thing. Look at a Christian response to the good, bad, and probable predictions. I'm an engineer myself, worked 37 years with MIT's Lincoln Laboratory and machine intelligence, and I actually have a chart about some of the stuff I've done, so we'll wait for that. Now, let's see what happens when I, page down, page up. I'm telling you, got the scroll. All right, so dealing with artificial intelligence in 20 minutes. You know, I've lost a few minutes here, but I heard a couple of talks recently with 100 charts on recent AI articles. It was fun, but it runs over an hour, so we're not going to do that. We're going to focus here. Now, let's define our terms. I'm a classical kind of guy, so in classical AI, we always used to say it's AI if we don't know how to do it. Once we do it, just a computer program. I like that one. That's my favorite. The current buzzword AI is any capable specialized software such as deep learning neural nets, the kind of stuff that's winning Go tournaments or helping automatic cars. We didn't used to call that AI, but artificial general intelligence, AGI, is really what we're looking at with the artificial intelligence futurists. It's often assumed to be near despite zero progress. If you had AGI, you could tell it something like, look into this technology and see if our company has any opportunities there, like you would to a person, and there's no progress there. We need to have a criteria for experts we can trust. You know, we can debunk a lot of the best-selling predictions, which we'll do, and then we can identify them and know who to consult in the future. Take a look at the real issues in the end. And so here's my outline. We'll look at the AI alarmists, the singularity and superintelligence, the opposing views, and then the real issues, and then the Christian perspective on the real, on the plausible impact, the real issues. We don't need to, once we've debunked some of the stuff, we don't need to worry about our Christian response to it. Okay, introducing the characters, and yeah, they are characters. Many of them. Ray Kurzweil is the top character, probably. Google executive entrepreneur. We'll look at his New York Times best-selling book, The Singularity is Near. That's from 2005. I'll use this abbreviation when I quote from it. Nick Bostrom, British philosopher. Now look at his book, another New York Times bestseller, more recent, 2014, Superintelligence. And I'll use that abbreviation for it. There's a lot of prominent supporters of the singularity and superintelligence, you know, guys like these you've heard of. What do they have in common? None of them have really built a state-of-the-art machine intelligence system recently or ever. There's a lot of visionaries, executives, philosophers. They're missing proper respect for the issues of dealing with even current software complexity. The AGI, artificial general intelligence, require an enormous boost in complexity over where we are now. And that's dubious. So here's Kurzweil. There's his smiling face. There's his book. The singularity, he pegs about 2045 when he plans to still be alive. Future period during which the pace of technological change will be so rapid, its impact so deep that human life will be irreversibly transformed. Our mortality will be in our own hands. Moore's law is really the guiding principle behind his belief. Things have happened so fast in the computer industry that he thinks it'll transition to a new technology whenever necessary, very rapidly. There's no 10 or 15 year gaps while we try to tool up to some new non-silicon thing. Progress in general increases at an accelerating rate, ignoring physics. The growth of computation supersedes any of its underlying paradigms and is, for present purposes, an ongoing exponential. So that's the philosophy there. Now, how are we gonna get to the singularity? What's that gonna consist of? Well, one way is to emulate the human brain, only faster on computing hardware. You know, the brain tends to use self-organizing, chaotic, holographic process. I'm not sure what that means. But he says a wide variety of projects demonstrate our ability to understand these techniques, so how the brain works. So that's news to me. And this is in 2006. But here he says, the accelerating pace of brain reverse engineering makes it clear that there are no limits in our ability to understand ourselves or anything else for that matter. So that's pretty out there. Now, the genetics, nanotechnology, robotics is sort of his technology piece in his book. So He doesn't. He's not bound by laws that some of us are bound by. He's got nutrients introduced directly into the bloodstream. He doesn't say where those are going to come from, but he's got metabolic nanobots, sensors in the bloodstream and body, using wireless communication. Hello, it's not going to work underwater. They're going to provide dynamic information on nutrients needed at each point in time. Late 2020s, okay. Billions of nanobots traveling through the bloodstream in our bodies and brains. Is the immune system? No, the immune system is not here. So you can read some of this stuff, but if he wants to live indefinitely without aging, that's really his plan. So some pretty wild stuff. Now Bostrom, he's a little bit of a younger guy there. He is, there's his book, also a New York Times bestseller. So greatly exceeds human cognition in virtually all domains. Comes sometime after human level machine intelligence, but similar to the singularity. So PAS is superintelligence. There's the artificial general intelligence. He has vague arguments with a lot of uncertainty on different approaches. He's a philosopher, right? So he's not going to really be quoting, bits and bytes to us. One approach is genetic algorithms trying to replay human evolution, but faster. Yeah, I hope it'll be a little faster. The whole brain simulation, is supposed to be more straightforward, but needs hardware and software development. He claims hardware and software. You don't need to know how it works. We know how to program one of these. It does take 20 years to get any useful work out of it. You should check the education track, if you want to hear more about that. If there are enough vague possibilities, surely that probably one will work is high. Engineers know that's not true. Absolutely not. So superintelligence, issues and consequences. Once we assume superintelligence is inevitable, but perhaps beyond 2045, I'll give him credit for that. He invokes game theory, and it's a lot of stuff like who will get it first, will a single dominant superintelligence exist. If you want to read one of these books, you don't want to support the author, give him any money or boost this thing, buy a used one on the internet. And I knew Kurzweil, I didn't want to support. He has plenty of money anyway. I bought his book used. I bought Bostrom's new. It was terrible. I would have bought it used if I had to do it again, because all of this stuff is based on kind of bad assumptions. Kurzweil invokes science fiction. You read this thing, you think of science fiction. This is kind of like a comic book, because he has superpowers. These are the superpowers. Intelligence, amplification, and so on. So it's interesting. Now, this thing should just click up, but instead we have to go through that. Bostrom and Kurzweil call for instilling our social values pre-Trump into the machines. Okay. So we have this quote, service of widely shared ethical ideals, law and treaty. Well, those have been dropping like flies lately. Kurzweil's got optimized life with all future non-biological intelligence will reflect our values of liberty, tolerance, and respect for knowledge and diversity. You can judge for yourself how many of those values we share now. Isn't this a religion? Yes. Anthony Lewandowski, this guy, he may or may not look familiar, but he's a convicted felon who was found guilty of a bailing out of Google's self-driving car project to go to Uber and steal the technology. But he's created this Way of the Future Church, abbreviated WOTF, which I'm sure a lot of internet guys think WTF, when they read some of this stuff. But I don't know if that's got to be just kind of a coincidence there. But he's going to create a peaceful and respectful transition of who is in charge of the planet. The website's kind of lean, but the Wired website, interviewed this guy, and they have some stuff here on what the activities. Realization, acceptance, and worship of a Godhead based on AI. Funding research to help create the divine AI itself. So he doesn't like the singularity. He talks about the transition. So he wants the machines to know we helped them by forming this religion or something. And so he thinks it's going to all be good. But, I suppose people have said, Henry VIII founded Episcopalianism, and, that has some good things. But I don't know, this guy, founding your religion might be marginal. I don't know if he's worse than Henry, but he probably is. Let's look at the opposing views. Let's introduce some debunkers here. Rodney Brooks is a great guy. You know, he's a former MIT professor and head of the CSAIL and founder of iRobot and Rethink Robotics. He builds stuff that really works. It's very complicated stuff, but you want a $30,000 robot arm that you can program by moving around, you know, Rodney's your guy. This Maciej Ceglowski, you know, was a Polish guy, and he's a good speaker, I bet. He's got some great talks, and he ran this bookmarking service, Pinboard. Me, I'm giving the talk, so you have to have me as an authority. 35 years working in machine intelligence, processing some large data sets, mainly radar and optical space data. Other people also debunk the singularity in superintelligence. Pedro Domingos is one. What do they have in common? Most have recently built large advanced software systems and all have proper respect for the complexity of the current state-of-the-art software. All right, Rodney Brooks, there he is. When will we have computers capable as the brain? Not in our lifetimes, not even in Ray Kurzweil's lifetime. Despite his fervent wishes, just like the rest of us, he will die in just a few decades. It will be well over 100 years before we see this level of our machines, maybe many hundred years. Dogs, intelligent, maybe in 50 to 100 years, we'll factorily challenge dogs. Do you have any qualms about a future if computers have human level? No qualms at all. The world will evolve so much in the next 100 plus years. We cannot possibly imagine what it will be like. Rodney knows a lot. And he says, you know, qualming in the face of zero facts, understanding is a fun power word game, generally not useful. Yes, this includes Nick Bostrom. So, you know, one interview, he just, oh my God, so awesome. Awesome, Rodney. Maciej Ceglowski, you know, is maybe even a funnier guy. He's got a bunch of arguments, and this is a great talk here. Check this one out sometime, Superintelligence on his website. The argument from woolly definitions, no way to define intelligence. You know, we don't know how, if the quantity can even be maximized. For all we know, human level intelligence could be a trade-off. Maybe an entity significantly smarter than a human being would be crippled by existential despair or spend all its time in Buddha-like contemplation. Maybe it will become obsessed with the risk of hyperintelligence. That could happen. The Slavic pessimism. We can't build anything right. We can't even build a secure webcam. Even code used for head of audit use for years can have crippling errors. The idea we can securely design the most complex system ever built, have it remain secure, does not match our experience, no. And, you know, he goes on to give the argument from actual AI. The actual AI, which is a buzzword AI by my definition, it's not in complex recursively self-improving algorithms. It's pouring massive amounts of data into relatively simple neural networks. I mean, they're simple in concept. They're very, very complex in terms of the number of parameters in there. They're incredibly complex. So really, it's the data that's made the breakthroughs in practical AI research these days, and also the graphics cards that let you run these things. So, you know, he says these constructs are fairly opaque after training. And you really, to make it better, you need to retrain it with more data. It's hard to change the algorithms, per se. And this is a good one here. I go from my roommate, the smartest person I ever met in my life, incredibly brilliant, light around play, World of Warcraft between bong rips. And, you know, assumption any intelligent agent will want to recursively self-improve, let alone conquer the galaxy to better achieve its goals makes unwarranted assumptions. You know, it reminds me of the seventh grade when my best friend was in the ninth grade, I met in the chess club, and he was this guy. Smartest person ever, but the bong rip thing he really got into in high school and he never really amounted to as much as people thought he would. I don't know if the computers would do that. You know, in my experience, you know, I've built several systems on the order of 100 to 200,000 lines of code. This is like scripting level, think Python, don't think C. You know, running in quite a few cores and processing a lot of sensor data, which an AGI would have to, you know. Sometimes you look at the output, look at the logs, about a gigabyte of logs a day, and of course alerts, and you'd be surprised by bugs, and you'd say, let's go track that down, and hopefully if I logged everything, we'd find it pretty fast. But just as often, we'd be surprised by algorithms. We'd say, oh, this isn't right, this can't be, this shouldn't have this property, this output. But we'd look through all the logs, and everything was working perfectly with the very front-end algorithms, very critical. We're interacting with the back-end algorithms, and because you had to fix some small thing in the front-end, you lost some invariant, some property you thought you had. And sometimes you can fix it, sometimes very, very difficult. This should just pop up here, too. The AGI would be incredibly more complex than these systems, you know, I've built. We're not able to create much simpler, reliable systems. You know, cyber. I have a whole cybersecurity talk, so that's beyond the scope of this. But interactions of the algorithms are hard to predict, and human-level AGI wouldn't be any better than a human, by definition, right? It's everyone human level. It's not going to self-improve by writing error-free code. My helpers didn't do it that, you know, that often either. Okay, let's get to the real issues. And you know, Nigel Cameron's talk was awesome. You know, every time he was telling the guy next to me, "Hey, I have a chart on that automation." He talked automation. You know, it's going to cause job loss to this capable special-purpose machine intelligence, which is what I like to talk about more than artificial. You know, the grocery stores of the future, self-driving vehicles, they're not going to be here next week, but you know, they will replace some drivers. Modern factories already have got a lot fewer workers, a lot more robots, and the research jobs, you know, can be in jeopardy too, due to some of the databases. You know, a century ago or more, we had U.S. agriculture jobs. You know, these are some Cambodian women, you know, just a few years ago, we took a picture of in a rice paddy. It's very labor intensive. In 1860, you know, 48% of us were involved in agriculture. Now, you know, it's, you know, 0.6%. So this well-known verse about, you know, working to eat, that makes perfect sense in agricultural economy. There's always a field you can plant somewhere, something you can harvest. There's always work, but, you know, not so much now. It's interesting. Now, this guy here is a combine that has 100 different jobs fully autonomously. It has a 75-gallon tank. It's got GPS. You just fill it up with diesel. You go to bed, and it just goes back and forth in the fields. It can do 100 jobs. It won't work in rice paddies. I'm pretty sure those Cambodian women still have a job. But, of course, I'm sure it costs quite a bit, too. Artificial stupidity is another real issue here. It's not that artificial intelligence will get too smart to go over the world, it's too stupid it already has. Pedro Domingos, he's got a good book. And the cyber situation, I mean, it's lurking behind this talk. It's serious. Software really can't resist the act. I mean, first Russian hacking of the 2018 elections I saw, you know, yesterday. And Internet of Things, you know, supercharges security breaches. You know, Nigel mentioned that this morning. You know, insecure sensors and actuators can easily be hacked. You know, my garage door openers were destroyed by lightning about 2 weeks ago, and I bought some replacements which are not controllable from the internet. You know, I saved $40 each, but I would have paid $40 for that property because I don't need going to be in Moscow opening my garage door or, you know, anywhere else. Pervasive surveillance. Oh, Nigel really did this chart for me. It's awesome. I mean, my chart's better than this chart. Well, you didn't have a chart. This is a scene in Hong Kong. You know, you count the cameras. Well, I don't know if there are any cameras here, but obviously there's a lot of places to put them. And China has this countrywide video tracking system with face recognition software. They have this many. They want to add 400 million more. And the social credit score is a real issue, as he said. If its score is too low, your privileges like travel are denied. The minority citizens are under special scrutiny. Christians, you know, probably could be as well. You know, Facebook's got a worldwide face tracking system. What could go wrong? You know, they've got 2 billion monthly users. So, I mean, privacy is at risk, but the totalitarian government surveillance, you know, scares me a little more even than that. Social media addiction, you know, here's some guys. I mean, it's a great thing to take a picture of their phone, but after a while, people are just looking at their phones, you know, too. I don't know if they're reviewing their pictures or they're just, you know, hypnotized by that. But these apps are really designed to maximize interaction time. They do a lot of different studies to see how it keeps your attention. It's the most valuable commodity, human attention. You know, human interaction certainly is reduced. Donna Freitas wrote a good book here. This is another bestseller, but I recommend this one, The Happiness Effect. And a lot of great research there. She's not a Christian, but one of the Christians that she interviewed impressed her the most in dealing with social media. The long-term effects are really kind of unknown. We haven't been at this for that long. Okay, Christian perspective, quickly. Well, you don't have to worry about the singularity of the AGI alarmists, you know, it's just, but you know, we've got modern computing, the massive databases of capitalism. And that's not a guaranteed recipe for a safe and prosperous future, unfortunately. You know, it does require a certain level of rules and regulations. Europe has this GDPR. and they've always had privacy regulations. We have kind of a patchwork. We never had the privacy regulations they've had. You know, Christianity underlies ethics for the ASA, but it's difficult, you know, it's hard to tell what the regulations are even going to do. A certain amount of humility is really needed. I mean, the current situation with large machine intelligence systems is hard to understand. I have trouble understanding my own, but it's at least it's difficult to understand the effects of, you know, of regulation. You know, I think that's not an excuse to do nothing. Now, you know, the software developers, you know, I've certainly been one and worked with a lot of them. They have certain codes of ethics. This is from the Association for Computing Machinery, the computer science one. The IEEE Computer Society has a similar thing. You know, you should really be putting out quality stuff and it should help you. But, you know, you don't even have to join this thing. You can just read the journals at work, right? So, you know, for Christians, I think, you know, we can add a few more things. I mean, the Proverbs and Colossians are that we should do good work, and I think everybody would agree with that. But yeah, I like James 3:1, you know, not many should become teachers because, you know, we who teach will be judged more severely than others. That's because teaching multiplies your effect out to dozens, to hundreds, maybe the low thousands, you know, traditionally. Now, with the internet, of course, it could be billions, but the app developers, certainly, it's millions of people that are affected by what they do. So I don't think many should become app developers, really. Well, anyway, summary is the AI futurists have been getting a lot of press lately. But don't believe everything you read in New York Times bestsellers. They may be a bestseller, doesn't mean it's true. It's going to be a newer world out there going forward. You know, machine intelligence is having great effect, and it will. Many of the newly developed technologies may affect society in ways that concern us, some of the things I mentioned. I recommend that the ASA keep encouraging Christians to discuss these issues. That's it. Any questions? A few minutes for questions. Ian?
Thanks very much, Tim, and especially for tackling this topic, very important. It seems to me, and this came up in my mind also, and I'd like to hear your thoughts about it, it came up during Nigel's talk this morning, and the crucial thing that we bring as Christians to this is a set of values. And what our society seems to be doing so much these days is stripping all values down to some kind of economic or lowest level of values, and that seems to drive this kind of problem that you're drawing attention to. If we really trusted and advocated for values which were human values, which is what Nigel was talking about this morning, and if that took over seriously, it seems to me that would have a very positive effect on this type of thing. What do you think about this question of values?
Well, I think money really talks. I mean, the kids, you know, working for a nonprofit for years and doing some recruiting, whenever the economy was booming, nobody wanted to work for us. You know, we could give competitive salaries, no profit sharing, no stock options, and the stuff might be classified. They might not be able to get it out there. Everybody wanted to go to work for Google. When they have a big recession, everybody would be knocking at our door, you know, and we'd hire everyone. I think that it's a problem, but I think, you know, we really need to get our message out to people, and I think groups like the ASA saying that Christians aren't all the stereotypes you see on TV, so that we can get more people following Jesus. I think it's difficult. You know, I've got plenty of good arguments that are not Christian arguments on some of the problems, but money talks, and the people in charge don't understand the stuff. Even guys like Elon Musk, you know, he's a brilliant visionary guy. You know, there's a lot he doesn't know about the nuts and bolts of how this is going to happen. And those are the guys making the decisions. And the geeks just have to do what they're told, you know, or look for another job. So I'm not that hopeful on it, really, you know. But
it's a tough problem.
Yeah.
So I'm struck by the pessimism or the I don't know how, if it's ridiculing, that has been thrown at some of these ideas, and I just wonder if you what your thoughts are about we have this urge to, you know, heal diseases, extend life, you know, solve these medical problems. And it seems to me that, you know, the singularity idea is a similar urge. And we have, in the Christian tradition, you know, we're not going to be afraid of death, but we are, we have the urge for eternal life.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if you know, there's a more positive view of the direction some of these folks are working toward than I think you're...
Well, I can give you a more negative view. These guys are really, if you read it, you're struck by the kind of fear of death some of these guys have.
Sure.
And the fact is, this is for the rich. This is for the Silicon Valley venture capitalists. This is not something they're good at. Those Chinese women are going to be able to afford, you know, in the rice paddy.
And if you need
this
a liver
transplant, try to help the rich live forever. That's what I'd say. And if you think that's a great goal, okay. But we're Doug Laufenberg just talked this, you know, yesterday. That's the kind of stuff we should be doing. Pushing to the singularity? No, I don't think so. All right. I'm timing myself out, but I don't know if our next speaker's here. Are you? Okay. Yeah. You got your thumb drive? So we can do it.